Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Thursday. Alex Appel from Fox 17 will join us at high noon. We'll talk about the mayor, John Cooper, of Davidson County and Nashville, the mayor of Nashville, coming out and saying that the city is prepared to move into phase one starting on Monday. So we'll get into all that and more with Alex coming up at noon. But right now, we always enjoy our conversations with our next guest, Ryan McGee from ESPN, at ESPN McGee on Twitter. He's ESPN's senior writer. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm good. You know, if I'm being 100% honest, when this thing started, I believed that I wasn't going to be that busy. But the reality is that I've kept hopping pretty good, which is good. And also, I'm happy to report that I'm a pretty good ninth grade math teacher, which I did not know that about myself because I was terrible at math in the ninth grade. But so far, I've been faking my way through that.
Wow, good for you. I have found myself saying, go ask your mom. I've said that a lot.
Yeah, well, I tried that, and then she kept saying, go ask your dad, and so we figured it out. But new math, old math, I'm bad at all math, but my daughter, thankfully, is good at it.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't ask me for math stuff. He's eight, but he's already smarter than me when it comes to math. So I wanted to see if you could weigh in on the discussion we had at the end of last hour. And you've been doing this for a long time, and so I honestly don't know the answer to this, but I do wonder, is it one or the other? And I wanted to see if you have an answer. So this stuff we've heard, Ryan, for, gosh, I feel like it's been close to a decade of, you know, the Power Five, they should just break away and do their own thing, and they could have a commissioner and all that. So we were getting into that, does college football need a commissioner? And let me just start with, where did all that start? Because I truly don't know. I said, I don't know if it was ADs and conference commissioners going, pounding the table and saying, we've got to break away, we've got to have a commissioner, or is this media-driven, something to talk about? Do you know the answer to that?
Well, I think it's certainly a narrative that's been, I mean, we in the media have talked about it a lot, but I think it's also something that starts, you know, in the room with the power brokers. I mean, I'll give you a personal anecdote. My father was a college president for almost 25 years in North Carolina, a Division II school. And he, for years, was the Division II representative on the president's council, which ultimately is the super friends room of the NCAA. You know, NCAA specializes in committees, right? There's millions of committees. But at the end of the day, the president's council, and when you go in that room, it's Father whoever is in charge of Notre Dame at that time, and it's Gordon Gee, and it's all these names that you know. And ultimately, and then there's one rep for Division II and Division III, and ultimately, that's the room that makes all the decisions. And so I think that's where it started, because the stories that come out of that room are that the conversation and the narrative is driven by the president of Notre Dame and the president of Arizona State and the president of USC and the president of Alabama, whoever's on the committee at the time. And so that's kind of where it starts. But here's the thing. And I years ago in ESPN the magazine, I said, I think they'll all expand to 16 teams and they'll have their own thing. And the non-Power Five schools, the Gang of Five, I call them, they kind of become what we've, you know, what FCS is now, or what we used to call 1AA. But here's the thing. The most unspoken thing about the NCAA is the inmates literally run the asylum. I mean, every committee is made up of the membership. And with the exception of Mark Emmert and the people who do the investigations, it's all run by the membership. And so you kind of have your own built-in scapegoat. And it's easy for the members to go, well, the NCAA, well, you're in the NCAA. You're on the committees. You're the one, you know, the coaches love to raise Cain about the rules changes. All rules changes start with a room of coaches and athletic directors on an NCAA committee. And so if you complain about the transfer rules, well, that started with literally a room full of coaches and ADs in a room. So I think it's kind of a convenient scapegoat, and that's why I don't think the NCAA will ever completely go away. But one day it might just be wholly run by, you know, the Power Five schools.
Well, with that being said, that was a really good answer. Why don't you think – I mean, why do the Power Fives need the NCAA? Why haven't they – if this has been – this narrative has been out there for so long.
Yeah.
Why haven't they just broken away? I mean, they don't need to ask about it. They can just go do their own thing. So why haven't they?
Well, because of – I think they've enjoyed the fact that, you know, it's this kind of endless cycle of blame or whatever else. And meanwhile, they're just doing whatever they want to do anyway. And the reality is they're kind of running the show anyway. The last great battle is going to be over the basketball money, because the Power Five schools control the football money. The Power Five schools control, you know, the TV contracts. They control the college football playoff, which is not run by the NCAA in any way, shape, or form. And so at the end of the day, you know, where the last big pot of money to fight over, which is what this is all about, is the NCAA basketball money, is the March Madness money. And so if it ever gets to a point where they have to make a decision who gets the biggest share of that cash, then and it's really the only money the NCAA controls, then that's where the division, that's where the breakaway will come from. And, you know, it's happened before. The NAIA used to be the powerhouse. And there's a reason the NAIA and the NCAA headquarters used to be across the street from each other in Kansas City, because one day a group decided they're going to do their own thing, and that's where the NCAA came from. And the NAIA is very happily, you know, where all the small schools live.
Interesting. So University of Tennessee yesterday said their intentions are to have classes on campus in the fall. And I believe that's now school 10 in the SEC, comprised of 14 schools. Where do you think, as we sit here in early May, all this is going? I know you don't have the answers, but you do have opinions. So where do you think this is going, Ryan?
Well, first of all, I give you credit, a lot of credit, because you mentioned the fact that campus is going to be open. And for whatever reason, there's a lot of people out there who seem to think that the football team runs a university. Because at the end of the day, and I mentioned that president's council at the NCAA, at the end of the day, whether the president opens or closes the doors is what's going to determine whether or not it's going to be football. That's it. That's I love Greg Sankey. I love all the ADs, the football coaches, whatever else. But Nick Saban has no say on whether or not the campus opens in the fall. The president of the university does. And so at the end of the day, the 100 guys on the football team are the tiniest percentage of a student body of 35,000 students who all have to write their tuition checks. That's where the money comes from. And so at the end of the day, that's what the presidents are worried about. So, yeah, I mean, you know, they're all in line. The SEC has always specialized in getting all the way back to the first time that, you know, Commissioner Cramer got them all in a room and said, quit fighting and start getting along publicly, and everybody get in line. And so they're good at that. And so that's what's happening. But we'll see. I mean, there's so much that can change. And, I mean, I don't have to tell you guys about the debate of reopening individual cities and counties and states. And we're so early into that right now that, if all of a sudden, and I'm talking to you guys from Charlotte, right on the North Carolina-South Carolina line, and if all of a sudden the same southern states who are opening things up a little earlier than everyone else suddenly turn into, you know, repeated hotspots in the summer, ain't going to be any football in the fall because the schools won't open. And so what are the parents going to do? You know, if the parents are twitchy and they don't want to send their students back, then that's going to determine a lot too. So it's my gut tells me we're going to have football in the fall. It's just going to probably start a little later than we want it to and maybe not have as many games as we want, but and maybe not have fans in the stands. But at this point, boys, I'll take whatever I can get.
We're talking to Ryan McGee, ESPN senior writer. And Ryan, I've often thought, and we recently read an article, and we were talking about it on the show, where it spelled out how many states are represented with all the conference expansion that's happened. It's even more so than it was 20 years ago, but there's 11 states represented in the SEC. And I put myself in the shoes of Greg Sankey often and try to figure out, I mean, just knowing that it's going to be very difficult for all 11 states, let alone 14 schools, to be on the same page. So how do you go about that? If there's a percentage of schools that are ready to play, a percentage of schools that aren't ready to play, and as we just talked about, it's all dependent on whether school is even in session. So how do you put that puzzle together?
Well, I think if your membership isn't all on board, I don't know that you play. I mean, I don't know how you can. If you are really the organization that you say that you are, and this is not an SEC exclusive thing, this could go to the Big 12 or the Pac-12 or whoever. If the entire membership isn't on board and everyone's not participating, I don't know how that works structurally. And I don't know if you're ever able to undo that damage, you know, in the room when you all get back in the room together. Because it's funny, I've talked to ADs and people who work in athletic departments who have coworkers who used to work at the conference office. And they get frustrated because the person from who used to work at the conference office is like, well, we have to do what's best for the conference. And the person at the school is going, no, we don't. We have to do what's best for our school. You know, if I'm so-and-so, I don't care what the guy's doing three states from here. I got to take care of my business. And so, yeah, it's going to create an interesting situation because I don't know that everyone's going to get on board with this. And I think that's representative of the debate we're having as a nation right now about what we should open and how quickly we should open it. And so, yeah, if your full membership's not on board, I don't know how you do it unless, you know, there's going to be the one school that's just going to take a stand and say, you know, y'all go on and play, I'm not going to.
You know, I'm inclined to agree with you, Ryan, but I've been a little bit surprised how many coaches have even gone on record, or even some ADs, to say, you know, we'll play. Even if six or eight of us are ready and five or six of us aren't, we want to play. We shouldn't be penalized for the fact that others can't. I've been surprised how many have gone out there and just gone with that opinion pretty strong, even on the date that we're sitting here.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think there's some very deliberate attempts to sway the court of public opinion. You know, you put pressure on your peers. If 10 of us are going to play and the rest of you say you aren't, well then, you know, now you try to paint the picture of who they are or who they aren't. And so, yeah, it's but at the end of the day, they're going to take care of themselves. This is why Greg Sankey is Greg Sankey and the rest of us aren't. He's the one that's ultimately going to have to sit in the room with those people and decide what they're going to do going forward. But, you know, I'll say this too, though. If you look at the larger college football landscape, as you guys said earlier, the SEC, certainly they're all getting in line a lot quicker than everyone else.
We're talking to Ryan McGee from ESPN. And, Ryan, you know, we're both NASCAR guys, so you're right there in Charlotte. And with this giant conversation of when sports will be back, obviously NASCAR made the decision to go May 17th at Darlington. They'll run the Coke 600 there in Concord outside of Charlotte at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. So what has been the discussion like around your area about NASCAR specifically and then sports as a whole and how maybe some of the other leagues are looking at what NASCAR is doing?
Well, and what you just said is it. And it's something that the NASCAR folks are not taking lightly at all, which is, all due respect to the UFC, you know, NASCAR is a much larger group of people, and logistically what they do on a week-in, week-out basis is different than any other sport, than maybe golf. And when you're talking about just gear and rigs and all that, it's a lot more than golf. And so, yes, the people I've talked to in NASCAR, they are on the phone constantly with the other professional sports leagues and some folks from NCAA, which is, what are you doing about this and doing about that? And there are going to be a lot of eyes on how NASCAR conducts these events at Darlington and Charlotte. They're going to run 7 events in 11 days. Now, 4 of those are Cup Series events, and then there's 2 Xfinity Series and 1 Truck Series race, and that's a lot. But there won't be any practice. There won't be qualifying. There's a possibility of qualifying at Charlotte. But I'm telling you right now, they're going to take you guys know this. Darlington is the most technically difficult oval on the schedule. It's not even close. Track built in 1950 for cars that were going half the speed that these cars are going now. And they are going to literally unload those cars, 40 of them, and send them off into turn one without any practice. It's going to be, for guys that haven't been in a race car now in a couple months, it's going to be interesting, to say the least. But logistically, I've been talking with those guys, working on something for ESPN.com about how they're going to make sure everyone is, using social distancing and how they're going to make sure that only this group stays with this group and there's not a lot of intermixing of teams and the spotters are going to be spread out through the grandstand. It's going to be interesting to watch, to say the least. And all due respect to people worried about when fans are going to come back, that's about stage 30 of what they have to do right now, is to try to figure that out. So, yeah, everyone's going to be watching, and I'll be watching too. I don't think any media is going to cover it, and that's good, because if they invited me, then my wife would probably divorce me at that point if I was going to the racetrack.
Yeah, I was about to ask you, if you're allowed to go as media, would you?
Well, it's honestly, that's It's a great question because it's been a bit of a debate, and I have not been invited. But that's also that's way down their list of priorities too. Is what they're going to do media wise. Fox will be there to televise it, and their broadcast partners certainly will have representatives there. But it's I told my wife, I said, "What if I bought a hazmat suit?" And she just stared at me. So I think that was my answer.
So your jokes aren't even working in quarantine time, okay?
Yeah, no, they didn't work before. And so they're not working. Yeah, close proximity has not done a lot for my comedic impact here in the McGee house.
So more time at the house, your material did not get better, is what you're telling
us. No, it did not. And I have honestly felt a little guilty about the fact that I have really enjoyed this. Like, as far as spending more time with my wife and daughter than I have in forever, I have not missed driving to the airport every 3 or 4 days. But I think if my wife were on this call, and she's not, she would probably tell you that she probably misses my American Airlines app dinging every now and then.
Well, if all else fails, we have the animals that invade minor league baseball parks to entertain us and things
like that. Yeah, listen, the minor league baseball people, and y'all know how I feel about minor league baseball. I wear a different minor league baseball cap every time we do Marty McGee. My first job out of school was working for the Asheville Tourists minor league team in the mountains of North Carolina. Yeah, the minor league people have done a fantastic job on Twitter. They posted a video today, wrote a great story about all the animals overtaking the fields. And I remember when I worked for the Asheville Tourists, we used to put that kitty litter kind of speedy dry corn cob based stuff out on the infield before we go home. When we come back the next morning, there'll be like 40 cats out there using it like a big kitty litter box. So we figured out we might want to come up with a different plan at that point.
Then you had to run poop patrol. Yeah, that
more
work.
Yeah, that was not. I wasn't getting paid enough money to. We were either pulling out the tarp or scooping up cat poop. Either way, $100 a week, boys. That's what that'll get you.
There you go. Ryan, on this show right now, we have to talk 4 hours a day, and we've picked our Korean baseball team. So
we have.
I've got the Doosan Bears. So, yeah,
and
we're just rooting for them.
How about the bat flips? I'm so excited to see Americans finally being able to enjoy Korean bat flips because I think it is I watched Korean baseball forever. We did a great story in ESPN the magazine years ago about bat flips. I think Mina Kimes wrote it, bat flips in the Korean baseball league. And I laugh when, one guy in major leagues half tosses a bat back toward the dugout and everybody flips out like he should be thrown in prison. And in Korea, they all look like Ric Flair running up the first baseline.
They do.
Ryan, good stuff. Really appreciate it. You and the family continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
You too, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, Ryan McGee from ESPN. Always fun having him on the
show.
He is. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donnick, and Chase next. Hey, if you manage or own a small business and you're open, and you're safely open, you want to let people know about it, well, we've got a great idea for you. It's called Free Business Friday. Today is Thursday, in case you didn't know. Tomorrow is Friday, Free Business Friday, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and it can be for you. This is where we are offering you free advertising if you're a local business that is safely open and working, and there's no cost and no catch. Yeah, it's that simple. You just have to get in touch with us and put it in motion. Visit thegamenashville.com/FBF, which stands for Free Business Friday, thegamenashville.com/FBF for more information. Free Business Friday is our way of supporting small businesses as we get through this together. Ryan McGee may have answered our conversation to wrap up hour number one to me. They already are running the thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not literally, but they are, right? They are running things. So why?
It's just not the title.
Well, yeah, if you're doing it without the title, then is it worth going through all that you'd have to go through for the title? Probably not. I don't know. I don't know.
I will submit that the only thing that changes anything will be if they can figure out how to get more money out of it. And if it financially...
They probably can. That's probably why I hesitated with at the very end, They probably could, but that's a lot of work. Is it worth it? Is it worth all the work and details for more money? Because I do think they could make more money, yes. But is it going to be worth all the man hours that it'll take behind the scenes to make this work, to pull away and make it work? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, well, and when I say money, if they can get more money out of it, I'm not necessarily talking about the big boys. I'm talking about the smaller schools, and I know that's easier said than done, but you know, if there's a, just thinking out loud, if there's a deal where the Power Five, they move off, they do their own thing, the 16-team conferences like we've heard for years, and then the group of five go and they do their own thing but get a separate TV deal, I mean, that's, who knows how much money's involved, but potentially it could be more than they're getting now. But then you don't have the support of the big boys either. So there are pros and cons to both sides, but this is
well, you don't need a commissioner if the Power Fives break away, if that's what you're getting at.
Yeah, that's true. You don't.
You don't need a commissioner. What do you?
You would have a committee. You would have a committee of the conference commissioners, essentially.
Well, I don't know what would happen. What happens with the rest? It's the fallout from the rest. I mean, Power Five conferences comprise of how many schools? Let's see, SEC has 14, Big Ten with 14 teams, Pac-12 obviously 12, ACC has what, 14?
Yeah, I think
Big
pretty
12
much
has Big 12. So everybody's got 12 and 14.
The Big 12 has, they don't have 12, I don't think. I don't know. I can't keep up with. Like the Big Ten.
So that is roughly how many schools out of one third, close to half. So yeah. You've got half breaking away, and that leaves the other half.
Yeah, and if the Power Five broke away and expanded to 16 in each conference, I mean that's 80 right there. So that would, you know, that and that's what I think would happen if they broke away, that they would all get to an even number.
Well, there will be schools begging them. I mean, we've talked about that story before. You know, the Memphises of the world and the Cincinnati's of the world, they would be dying to get on that raft, right? They would say, hey, we got women and children, we need on that raft. You know, that's what they would be trying.
Would
to
it be,
be a
would
lot
it be
of
better
lobbying.
Though? I mean, would it be better if you just had, in just talking Power Five, but if you had an even number of teams in each conference? I think it would be. I would support that.
Well, I don't think it really matters.
Well,
you're not watering it down, but I just think that if they're going to do that, there's schools that are worthy that are not in the Power Five conferences right now, that are worthy of being picked up and put in Power Five conferences. So it
you
want to
know something
happen.
That's crazy? The Big Ten has 14 teams and the Big 12 has 10.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not sure that it's ever going to happen. That's why I brought up, is this media driven or is it really? I don't feel like it's been out there. This narrative has been out there for a long time, and I don't know what they've added. They've added teams to their conferences during all this talk, and yet they haven't broken away. So I just don't feel like they're going to break away. I just think they're already running the show as it is. Everybody's getting rich whenever you're playing. And so they've probably made up their mind it's not worth all the work to figure it out behind the scenes. That's what I believe.
Yeah, you could be right. I just it's a conversation, and I've heard you say this, that it won't go away. It never seems to go away. So what does that mean? Does that mean anything, or it's a conversation that we like to have on sports radio for, you know, to get our kicks. But I thought it was interesting this morning when Ryan and I went down that road, and it started as one thing. It started with James Franklin's comments, and then it evolved into that and a college football commissioner. So thought you guys would like to weigh in too.
Well, let's say that there was even a college football commissioner in place today. How would you view, because I think every conference commissioner is dealing with this right now, but James Franklin came out pretty strong in that article that you sent us, Chase, where not only was he talking about, did it bring up this discussion, but when he comes out and says, hey, if we're ready to play, let's play. Even if only six or eight teams or something in our league are ready. You know, how do you handle stuff like that? Like, that's extremely difficult. And as Ryan kind of pointed out, it sort of puts pressure on everybody else, where the football coach might be sitting there going, hey, I don't have control of this, man. My school's not in session. What do you want me to do? You know, you're going to have us sacrifice all the money that we're supposed to get from the conference, even though we're not allowed to play? I mean, there's a lot of logistics here that are very, very difficult. And I'm kind of surprised as many people have come out publicly and said, yeah, if we're ready to play, and we'll deal with everybody else.
Well, let's
and if
let
you can't,
people,
tough luck.
Let's let people, Marquise, if you could get that, James Franklin, let's let people hear exactly what we're talking about. Here's Penn State, former Vanderbilt head coach, now Penn State head coach, James Franklin, talking about what Willie just threw out there.
I had another coach in the league call me yesterday, and that's what he was kind of recommending, that the Big Ten kind of come out and say, hey, this needs to be consistent across the Big Ten. And I said, I just don't think that's going to work. It either needs to be national or not at all. But I just don't see how that's going to work. For example, say you have six schools in your conference or eight schools in your conference that all are able to open and get going, and there's one or two or whatever the number is that can't. Are you going to penalize all these schools not being able to open? So, for example, with the Big Ten, say we have two or three schools that at the end of the season are part of the playoff conversation. Well, the schools that we're competing against in other conferences, you know, they were able to open before we were, and the Big Ten held back certain schools for a school that maybe isn't a hot spot in our conference. So it's not ideal. I think we all grew up in an NCAA that tried as much as they possibly could to level the playing field. And this would be one of those things. But I just don't see how that's going to happen with climate differences. And Arizona is going to be very different than New Jersey. And Florida is going to be very different than Maryland, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I don't think you're going to like it. And I don't think you know, people are going to be happy about it. But I think in reality, I don't see how you're going to be able to hold up 10 or 12 schools in one conference from two states that are opening up a month later. And I think that's the same thing by conferences. I don't think you can penalize one conference, you know, from opening because another conference is opening way ahead. I think there's got to be some type of guidelines nationally from the NCAA that making sure that conferences aren't pushing to open earlier than they should. But I think if you get into it any more than that, then I think you're going to do more damage than you're going to do good.
What do you guys make of that?
Well, I'm not quite sure what he's advocating there, to be honest with you. When I read the quote, if you take pieces of that quote, it almost sounds like he's saying there could be a scenario where part of a conference is playing, part is not. It sounded to me, though, that he's almost saying he wishes there was somebody at the very top saying, we're all playing, or we're not all playing. That's how I took it. You tell me.
I, like you, was a little confused on what exactly his message was.
He said a lot.
Well, he says hi to you guys, by the way, but that's a different conversation. I working on some things. I took it this morning when Ryan and I played that. Is he's not wrong on some things. He said that not everybody's going to like it. Well, that's the message in all of this, that not everybody's going to like whatever is decided. But you do have to, in some senses, the show has to go on. Now, the other part of it is he's talking like a football coach, that he knows his team, he's got a pretty good team, and he's not worried about if Ohio State can't play. If Penn State can play, like, well, sucks to be Ohio State, but – We gotta go. I mean, we gotta get our season going. So I took it that way, that it was almost both sides of his mouth a little bit, that there was the coach speak and then there was some truth and that he wasn't wrong in some of the things he was saying.
So how do you handle this? Because it is very clear. Now, he did bring out you know, the regions, and it is true. I mean, look at the South right now. The South, all you know, it's almost like it's green light go. And so, not, you know, the South is going to treat things differently than the Northeast or, you know, the Northwest. For now, but that's what we're talking about, the now. So how do
you?
Yeah,
but there is no now.
Well, what if there isn't? But what if there is no? It stays the way it is. So
well, I got a pretty good idea that you're not going to hear from Greg Sankey with any definitiveness until he absolutely has to make the call on practice in July. Right now, I think it's hard enough because. Let's pick a state in the Southeastern Conference. Let's just take Georgia, right? And so the Georgia Bulldogs are all asking the questions, well, what are our players allowed to do? They need to lift weights. You know, can I bring them into our facility and let them use our weight room? Well, no. Okay, well, the gyms, can I let them go down to Darren's gym, which is open now? At half capacity, everybody's wearing masks and all that stuff. So what's the better scenario, right? What are you allowed to do? That's very difficult. But the real big decision is, you know, in July, are we green light go for practice? And I don't think they'll make that call until the final possible date they can do, which is, you know, probably July 1 or something like that. Somewhere in there.
Right, but I mean, when they make that, what – once again, it kind of goes back to the commissioner talk. How do you get everybody, or can you? What if 88% is they're ready to go, green light go, but 12% aren't? So what do you do?
So who makes that decision? That's what you're asking.
That's why you wait. Yeah. That's why you wait till the very last possible minute until all the data is in. But that's where it's awfully tough. And let's just take Greg Sankey. If you have 12 out of 14 schools, can you make the call? Does he have the authority to say, hey, for the 12 schools that are ready to go, go. And then we'll wait and see on the other two? Or is it all for one and one for all?
This is what started that whole conversation, though.
At this pace, they're all 14 going to be on the – I mean, it's gotten to 10 pretty quick. By the way, is Vanderbilt announced? Vanderbilt's not one of the 10, right? They haven't said anything.
I don't know. I haven't checked.
Just went
I don't
phase
know.
One, so.
Yeah. True. Yeah.
I don't know if they've made
us.
The determination. But I think the other part that James Franklin, I think, was getting at was when he said New Jersey is different than Arizona, Florida is different than Maryland, does the SEC act – even if the Big Ten is in a different place, right? The SEC might have 14 for 14, but the Big Ten might not. And so what do you do then? Does it look good? Is it a good look? Because Ryan McGee was sort of hinting at that too, is, you know, the SEC might be the ones pushing the envelope with climate and all of that stuff. They might be in a better position than some leagues to do that.
I would say right now it feels like it would be a stretch to think today that the Big Ten could get 14 teams in a position of green light go in the next. What did you say? What did you say? June or did you say July? July?
He said July 1.
By July 1.
Well, July 1. When does practice start? When would you normally start your preseason practice?
Well, it's
normally
after SEC media day.
Right.
A couple weeks after that, so late last week in July, something like that, maybe first week in August, depending on when you have your first game.
Right. That sounds right. Mm-hmm. Because
so I would think right around July 1st, you
got
to make the call.
What, third week in July?
Yep. It would have to be somewhere around there that you're making this decision.
Well, they've been the SEC media days has been earlier July, right? It's been
they have been moving it up earlier,
days, yeah.
And it's been smart because they've done it during that week, the All Star week for baseball, right?
They took the dead week where there's less going on in sport.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's supposed
and then are
to
we
start
even having
July.
SEC media day? That's the other thing. Or and can you make the determination in July?
July 13th is when it's supposed to start this year.
That we're pushing things back a month. or 2 months, right? Ryan McGee put that in as a possibility. That's in there too. And then, of course, you could make the determination that we're not playing in the fall. We're going to play in the spring.
Well, I don't
but
think
how
he
uniform
was saying
can
that.
You get?
He was saying starting later, but starting in October, but just going later.
Yeah, or having less games, and or having less games.
Yeah, I don't know why you would start up and do less games if you're college football. You know, that's just me. I'm thinking if you're starting up, you're going to get your 12 games in, I would think.
I mean, that would be the hope, but I think you also have to look at it as it's better than nothing. So that
yeah, but I mean, let's be honest. You're coming back for those TV. You want to honor the TV contracts, right? So
I mean, that's why we're still having a conversation on May 7th about the NHL potentially finishing their regular season and then playoffs because in the NBA too because of the TV deals. That's what all this stems from. They don't have those kind of contracts with the television networks. Who cares? It's a moot point.
We'll talk to Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet coming up at 1 o'clock today. We'll come back and wrap up hour number two next.
Darren Donican, Chase, Little Prince bringing us back. Good stuff. Chase McCabe, Darren McFarlane, Willie Donick hanging out with you. Marquise Munson back at the Wholesaling Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. So, guys, I know the other day, and Darren, this has been blowing up on Twitter, your picky eater contest that you put out there. I think Darren's back.
I'm back.
But the picky eater contest that you put out there, and what you get 1 point for every food that you will not eat. You were number 14, but people still responding to this.
I know the answer is I've never had anything that has flooded my timeline for now 6 days like this. Like, for the most part, I haven't been able to see what's on my timeline because it's just this. And let me see. Last check, it was approaching, it was almost 440 likes, 49 retweets, and almost 1,300 responses to this. Like, wow. I said, this has been going on for 6 days.
You've gone viral.
On my timeline. So almost 1,300 people have responded to this. It's like a 1,290, I think, the last time I checked. And so, yes, I had no idea. It was just, you know, fun stuff that we've done. Just curious where people were and, you know, their eating habits. And so, one, we have not revealed our numbers. And two, what was on this. I had no idea this was going to take off like it did. But the picky eater test is 1 point for every food that you will not eat. And I didn't exactly count. Did you guys see 12, 14, 16, 18, 20? So there's looks like 63. I think 63 on the list total.
I thought we did reveal our numbers because I remember having this conversation.
I did on Twitter, but we haven't discussed it on the air.
We have not. So what were your numbers to recap?
Mine was 11.
Yours was 11.
Mine was 9.
Yours was 9, and mine was 14. So I was the pickiest. And Marquise, what was your – I think Marquise is going to actually be pickier.
No, I'm a very picky eater.
What was yours, 48?
Yeah, well, no, probably so. Nah, it was 16. Well, 16.
16,
yes.
Okay.
So not Marquise, that bad.
No, that's not horrible.
Well, I've gotten better because, like, I've been on some, like, healthy stuff lately. I haven't been eating, like, you know, junk food like I normally do. So there's a lot of stuff that's on this list that I haven't tried before, but in the last 2 months I have. So, and they're okay.
Everybody's got the not no, but heck no on your list. What were some of your no's, not no's, but heck no's on your list? No chance you're eating.
Eggplant.
Yeah.
Yeah, eggplant was definitely on my list.
For me, canned tuna. Hate
really?
Tuna.
Really?
Yeah, I was. That was a no for me.
Really?
That was a no for me.
That didn't even make my list. Huh.
Yeah. Blah. Definitely not that. Oysters, another blah.
Yeah, that's on my list.
I'm in for oysters. I'm in.
Ooh, no. That's a no.
No, no, no.
Did you see the movie Long Shot, Charisse Theron? Seth Rogen.
I still haven't seen that. Yeah.
Oh, it's really good movie.
Yeah, that's a good one.
When you brought that up.
I haven't seen the whole thing, but it's good.
Well, when you brought that up yesterday, Willie, about what is in Canada is the prime minister, and that's the movie I thought about. Wasn't he the prime minister of Canada?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she's in the restaurant eating with him, Charlize Theron, and she's the Secretary of Defense in this movie for us, and he's sitting there just going, eating those oysters, and I'm just going, I'm wanting to throw up in that scene watching him eat oysters.
Saying that and then the sound effect you made just made me cringe.
Oh, well, that's what it sounds like, okay. Right? He's going, I'm like, oh, gross, right out of the shell. Oh, raw fish is a big no for me, too. That's a big heck no.
So you don't like sushi?
I'm in on that.
Nope.
I'm in on it.
Out. Out. Snails, way out.
No, yeah, that's a no-go for me.
Way out.
I hate.
Where is everybody on tofu?
Not a fan of tofu.
I mean, it's on my.
I've kind of had to adapt. You know, living with vegetarians,
yeah, you didn't
I
have
to
choice.
Adapt to tofu.
Eggplant.
I don't choose to eat it, but I. It's not a no. It's not a will not eat.
Here's a heck no for me. Beets. Heck no.
Nope.
I've come around on beets. I would have had there was a time I would have had a no-go on beets and Brussels sprouts, but I'm now in on both.
The only beets I like are the headphones. That's it. I mean, I'm not eating them. Not eating beets.
Even if they're prepared, like there's a way to prepare them now where they're much more flavorful than if you just ate them raw.
I can't get raw out of my head, and when I see just beets, I want to throw up. Yeah, no. I don't even know what you're talking about, flavorful beets. I would never even explore. I don't ever explore any beets option. So are you talking about stuffing it in a chocolate cake?
No.
Okay. Then I'm probably not interested.
I'm surprised sour cream isn't on this list.
Because that's kind of a hot button one, right?
Yeah, I'm a no-go on that one.
I used to hate sour cream. And for whatever reason, and this is like in the last few months, I've started eating it. But I just one day it got left. I think I went somewhere and it got left on a potato or something, or maybe a Taco Bell was left on a taco, and I just ate it and I was like, okay, this isn't so bad.
Oh, I love sour cream, but that is a good one though. You're right. It's a mixed
polarizing.
Bag. It is. It's polarizing. You're right about that.
I hate watermelon.
Yeah, you did bring
that
up.
You said
that
before.
Day.
I'm not against watermelon. I am a no-go on cauliflower.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a no-go, too.
Oh,
it's on
I
my
love
list.
Cauliflower.
Asparagus, too. No-go.
I'm in on asparagus.
I don't
Brussels
love
sprouts.
Asparagus.
No-go.
Brussels sprouts, asparagus, late bloomers for me. I'm all in
same.
On those now.
I don't love asparagus, but I'll eat it. Like, I don't love it, but Brussels sprouts I do.
My grandmother McFarlane. Grandma McFarlane lived till she was like 98, and my entire for this like a long, long, long time, what I remember about her, and I loved her, but she ate this all the time, and it just cottage cheese, and it is definitely on my list. No cottage.
Yeah, I put that as a no. I put that as a no go.
That is a no. Eggplant,
what about pimento cheese?
Grapefruit, by the way, was on my list. I'm a no on grapefruit.
Don't like grapefruit?
No.
I'm not big on it, but I'll eat it.
Yeah.
Coconut, no. It's a no. 86 coconut. Don't do coconut.
What's wrong with coconut?
Just not into it. Must be. I think it's the texture, but I'm a no go.
Texture
anything,
will do it. A
anything
lot of times.
Coconut,
oh, yeah.
I'm out. Out.
Texture is a big thing. I agree.
It's I won't even eat zingers because they have coconut. I'm out. Yep, not going to do it. So, anyway, thought it was
do
fun.
Do you like broccoli?
Yeah, I do.
That's another one. It's a late bloomer.
But you don't like cauliflower.
I like it now. I like broccoli. I don't like – I can't do the cauliflower. I can't do it.
See, I grew up on both. My grandmother would make it with cheese sauce, and I think cheese makes anything good, and so I think that's kind of what started
blends them all
me,
in together, yeah.
Yeah, but now, I mean, I love cauliflower. And I never had – I was never picky about broccoli. All about some steamed broccoli, just a tiny bit of butter or oil on it.
Very I'll good. Say this.
I'm no on mayo, too.
Oh, condiments, I'm all yes. Yes, 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 yes. So no on mayo.
None.
On the list. I don't love
What do you
mayo.
Put on your BLT? No mayo?
I seldom have a BLT, but not mayo for sure.
Wow.
Ben said, Ben on our text line says cranberry sauce.
Yeah, I'm a no on that.
I'm way in on cranberry sauce.
Oh, I'm all. That's
I need a whole can.
Yep, favorite. I love the can. I know people make the homemade stuff. I love the can. Like, just get the can. It's fine. I love that at Thanksgiving.
Did anybody have a food that they had a bad experience with as a kid, like you threw up or something, and it's never, you've never been able to shake it?
It's never come back.
Stuffing is that for me. I had a bad experience as a kid, and I've never even tried it. So I don't even know if I would like it or not. I don't ever even look at stuffing just because I had a bad experience as a kid.
I think that's the reason I hate pineapple.
Really?
I'd have to go ask my mom, but I briefly remember when I was little, because my grandmother would have it all the time, that I think I ate too much and I got sick, and so it just psychologically I can't do it anymore. Like, I hate everything about it. I was that way with Alfredo sauce for a very, very long time.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
And then when dad first opened the restaurant and had Alfredo sauce, I wouldn't touch it. And then it became my favorite thing because one day I finally just, like, somebody made me try it. I think that's what it was.
Green
like,
eggs and ham.
Nate on Twitter says,
Try it.
Dark chocolate, coconut-filled Russell Stover eggs. They are the bomb. Look, I'm a big fan of dark chocolate, but I'm not eating dark chocolate with coconut. Nope.
What's wrong with that? Why would dark chocolate even be on the list? Who? What's so bad about dark chocolate? Like,
Willie,
like putting down chocolate.
I know. I saw a lot of people say it in their responses, and I thought the same thing. I'm like, how could you – dark chocolate? Are you kidding? But
I'll tell you what was interesting to me. There were some people that had zeros.
Yes. A lot of zeros.
They responded with zero.
Lots, and I couldn't believe it. And basically people saying, I'll eat
anything. Hal Gill was a zero.
Wow.
He was zero, and he said, but he said he doesn't really think that tofu actually counts. So
we have a ton of responses on the text line.
Lindsey Rowley is a zero.
Jason just tweeted me and said, "Cotton candy, I threw up so bad I saw stars." Wow. Ooh. So I guess he doesn't eat cotton candy anymore.
The Dallas Stars? I throw up at them too. Especially that stupid song.
Kathy Morgan says, "What about cauliflower rice?"
Yeah, I like that.
She said, fooled my brother making it, and now he loves it. Okay.
You can't tell the difference. So that's true.
Maybe I could be fooled.
I could probably be fooled. I would probably say that there's a real shot, even though I had cauliflower on my list, I could probably be fooled and at some point take it off the list. That's a good point.
Chris Mason is a 12.
Okay.
You know, there's one thing that is not on this list, and I'm double-checking to make sure. I don't see squash on this list, and that surprises me.
It was not on there.
I feel like that's
is on there, but not squash.
Zucchini is on there.
But I feel like squash is that's another one of those. You either love it or you hate it. But there's a fine line, and you have a lot of people on either side.
I kind of felt like, why would you – kind of what you were saying, Willie, about the dark chocolate. Why were the chocolates on there? Why is dark chocolate and white chocolate on there? So there's some people that love dark chocolate, hate white chocolate, love white chocolate, hate dark chocolate. I don't
love dark chocolate. No, I don't hate it. I won't. It's like not like I won't eat it. But, you know, if somebody's like, oh, I have chocolate or I have, you know, like a really rich fudge or something, I don't always take it. By the way,
olives are a no-go for me. Big no.
Love olives.
No go.
I could eat olives.
That's another acquired taste that I've come around. I'm a big fan of olives now.
Out.
Big fan.
Not even on
pizza. Used to be.
Out. Won't touch it. Red or black, it doesn't matter. Is there a difference? You guys tell me. You eat olives.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a difference.
Okay. Wouldn't know. I'm a no on both.
Dalton says, bad experience for me is chicken noodle soup. Can't eat it now.
Yeah. I think we all have that, right? That something scarred us as a kid, and you've just never gotten past it. Mine was stuffing.
Hmm.
Somewhere I went downhill on mushrooms. When I was a kid, I think I ate mushrooms, but now I don't.
That's right. You
They're on my list now.
So you don't do any mushrooms?
No. Out.
We'll go to Alex Apple.
The highest score. The highest score I've got is 21 on here.
We'll go to
What's the highest score you saw on any of these,
oh, I
these
saw
things?
30s, I
see a 21.
40s. I saw,
you saw
30s,
30s
and
40s?
Yeah.
In the 40s?
Oh, yeah. I saw people in the 40s. Yep.
Willie, you need to take the break to look at what just flew over your head.
We'll go to Alex Apple from Fox 17 to start the third hour. That's next.